You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. In today's She Leads Tech Series podcast, we're joined by JJ DiGeronimo, who has spent 20 years in technology, mostly in Silicon Valley, and is a board member for SaaS-based companies, as well as president of Tech-Savvy Women. JJ, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to get started.
All right, excellent. What have you found to be some of the major challenges that women encounter in entering and advancing in the tech workforce?
Well, obviously it varies per person, but I think that many women that I talk to in the high school and college level are intimidated. They think that they have to be essentially a coder, a gamer. They have to understand how to take apart particular devices. And I often try to encourage them that, you know, tech and STEM-based initiatives, both in the corporate level and in the industry, take all different forms. So if you study marketing, getting a minor in potentially data analytics, if you're interested in support or customer service, you will be trained on the technology in which they want you to support. So although it may look intimidating from the outside, there are some really fantastic career trajectories that students can take for really any type of discipline that interests them.
What can be done to make technology roles seem less intimidating and more welcoming and accessible?
So I think there's a lot of ways. I mean, internships are a great opportunity. Job sharing, job shadowing, all great opportunities. One of the things that I do on my YouTube channel, TechSavvyWomen.tv, is I interview women in the field. And I ask them specific questions about how did they get in the field, what job did they start at, what job are they at now, what advice would they give. And I think by demystifying the past, I think a lot of folks essentially think you get some sort of tech degree, and then you move into the industry. And in many cases, that isn't the case. Many people get into the industry haphazardly. They have a connection after college. Some of them do take computer science or computer information systems or some type of tech-based degree. But oftentimes, there's different ways to get in. And I think once they get in, they realize, hey, I can do this. Because for many of us, tech is really a tool to solving business problems. And if you have a good business mind, you'd usually use technology as a way to get to that business goal that you're trying to achieve.
Once women are in the tech workforce, of course, the challenges certainly don't end there. There are several obvious forms of gender bias that come into play. And then there are the more subtle, but perhaps more pervasive forms of gender bias. Can you touch on some of those more subtle forms that women experience and what can be done to address them?
Sure. It's interesting because the biases may vary based on who you're working for, what organizations, what part of the world you're in. So I feel like you could ask many different people professionally of some of the biases they've encountered, and there are many twists and turns and different opportunities or lack of opportunities that exist. But some of the things that I've experienced with women are not being invited to particular meetings or particular dinners or even weekend retreats. I've been in situations before being the only woman on the team that it might be a little bit odd to do an overnight retreat with a whole group of colleagues that may be a different gender. There's other situations that I've talked to women about is, you know, during the interview process, they've been suggested that they might not be able to hang with the guys. There's other things about project allocation that, you know, men essentially, research shows based on a Harvard study, that men oftentimes get better projects than women, more P&L, more staff, more line of executive sight. So these are all things that could happen to you, and I'm sure that there's a whole slew of stories out there from your listeners of things that have happened to them. And I think that it really comes down to having the self-confidence to align yourself with the people that are going to help really allow you to get more exposure and experience and opportunities in the job in which you reside right now.
Is there an extra hurdle that needs to be overcome for women in fields like technology that typically have been so male-dominated?
Sure. I think for women, those fields seem intimidating. And for those of us that have worked in those fields, you know, again, it comes back to solving business problems, learning technology that can do that. And I think that immersing yourself in those conversations, those opportunities, and even whether you take some free courses on Coursera or you go out to YouTube and learn about it, I think really understanding where you want to have an impact and then creating relevance around that. And I think for many of us, we think we can't do it, or it's intimidating or impossible, or I don't have the smarts for it. But in reality, most of us can do the work. We just have to put the time in and preparing ourselves for those opportunities. And the great thing is, in many of our communities, they're having conferences and training sessions and even certifications. And I encourage, you know, more women to participate, because we need diverse thought at the table. And really, it's just about stepping up and, you know, really just taking control of those opportunities.
Do you think enterprise leaders are generally more aware or unaware of many of these challenges? And what will it take to prompt corrective actions and policies?
Well, the good news is that I find that I rarely meet an executive that is intentionally trying to hold diverse talent back. Oftentimes, it's what they've grown up with, what they've experienced, the folks that are in their network really helps or deters them from being an advocate for diverse talent. And when I work with a lot of organizations on hiring women in tech, advancing women in tech, and many of the strategies that I show them based on research, they're surprised. They don't realize oftentimes that the way women and men go about positions. Men generally feel comfortable applying for positions at the 60% mark, meaning they have 60% of the requirements. Women often don't apply for a position unless they have all of the requirements. And if you've been in tech a while, you know job descriptions can be fairly long, with many requirements, many qualifications, and oftentimes those job roles can deter women from applying. Not to mention, you know, internal positions. I've even met many folks that have internal positions that can't get more diverse talent to apply. And so often I talk about looking at the job description, look at your management, look at the women in the organization that you want to apply, have discussions with them about why they may or may not be applying. Because oftentimes there's small tweaks you can make in an organization to get more diversity in leadership positions.
Some organizations have formal programs in place designed to address workforce gender disparities. What are the key ingredients for success in those kinds of programs?
So I really think it's a three-tier approach. You know, I always say don't start an ERG group, an employee resource group, or a women's group, or a women's initiative if you don't have executive buy-in. You really need executive buy-in, because executives really chart the path of many professionals in the workplace. And if they're not bought into it, then it just looks like a subgroup or a side group. Then taking the other end, which is the women. You know, women have to understand the corporate culture, but more importantly, sort of the strategies that will help them get ahead. After being in tech for 20 years, I have to say most of the content that I've included in my second book, Accelerate Your Impact, I was completely unaware of. I did not realize how important it was to have sponsors in the organization. These are people that are maybe one or two layers above you that have social capital to help you open doors, get into meetings, or even get you on that short list. And so women have to be aware of the things that they have to activate to help make those groups successful. I meet so many women that, you know, really hope that their good work will get them that next level promotion or that opportunity. But what I have found in many cases that they have to activate their network, they have to bundle their value and align to the right people in their network and in their corporation to help pave those paths. And so you have the executive buy-in, you have the women that have to be more skilled on how to maneuver the professional landscape, and then you have managers. Managers are the reason people stay or leave. And so making sure that you educate first and second line managers on how to cultivate talent in the organization. Many people get promoted because they're really good at individual contributor role, but they're not great at being a manager. And making sure you have that education in that middle management and first line manager is critical to retaining talent and advancing talent in the organization.
You've spoken of the importance of courage and risk taking in women's career growth. What are some examples of steps that women can take in the spirit of that type of mindset?
Yeah, so I did mention earlier that women wait till 100%. And I talk a lot about this in my workshops with women in tech and some of the keynotes I do. And what I often encourage women is to exercise their risk muscle. There's a book called The Confidence Code, and it talks that women essentially take fewer risks than men. And this really goes back to having to be 100% prepared. When women are waiting to check every box on the job description or wait to raise their hand for that promotion because they don't have all the aspects necessary for that particular job, they stifle their own growth. They have to assume that they have to leave before they're totally ready so that they have the ability to prove to themselves that they can do it, which in most cases they can. And taking jobs before you're 100% ready, like at the 70% mark, gives them the ability to build their self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is about having a vision for where you want to go and believing you can achieve it. And when NCWIT, the National Center for Women in Technology, along with IEEE and other organizations, have studied women that have stayed in the STEM or tech field, most times women have high self-efficacy, meaning that they've taken opportunities before they're ready, they've proved that they could do it, and they continue to strive on their mission. And I think for women, the best advice I can give them is take jobs before you're ready. If you're 60 or 70% qualified, it's time to go. It's time to really take that opportunity and run with it. Because honestly, it doesn't benefit anybody to wait till you're 100% ready.
As we begin a new year here in 2019, what gives you the most optimism that a brighter future is on the horizon for women in the tech workforce?
I think women in general are feeling more confident stepping up, saying yes, saying no, and really feeling like they have the capabilities, the mindset, and the ability to make their goals a reality. I feel like there's a really big shift happening right now where women are stepping into their personal and professional power, per se, and I'm seeing more and more women raise their hand, apply, start to market for new initiatives. Maybe they want to do something in a community or even join a board.
So you're detecting some real momentum.
Well, I think for women, you know, if you feel like you want to do something more, this is the time to do it. And if you're looking for inspiration or you're looking to talk to somebody about doing this, we have tons of content on the YouTube channel, on techsavvywomen.net, and there's just tons of information. And I think it's really about just taking that first step. And for those women that are listening in that maybe have been doing a certain discipline for a long time and want to jump into blockchain or cybersecurity or the next wave of cloud, I encourage you to do it. We need more women at the table, and many of those technologies are still in their early ages and early infancies, that this is a great time for women to take on and learn more about these technologies, because you could easily be an active participant within 6 to 12 months from now.
All right, JJ, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom on this topic. We loved having you with us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I look forward to staying connected.
Thank you as well to our listeners. For more on ISACA's She Leads Tech program, visit sheleadstech.isaca.org.